Welcome to the Situation Update, Monday, February 28th, 2022. Mike Adams here, your host. The world stands now on the verge of an escalation that could put us into literally a global thermonuclear war. It's a horrendous scenario that is unfolding, and it's actually kicking in even faster than I had warned. Although the blueprint is exactly what we've been talking about for quite some time, of how Biden is going to push Putin into either attacking America with cyber attacks or nuclear weapons, or the Obama deep state under fake President Biden is going to carry out those acts themselves against America and then blame Putin. So I wrote a very important story yesterday that's published on Natural News, and it contains 23 points. I actually did a mega thread on social media first. So this was posted on Brighteon.social and my Telegram account. Telegram is Real Health Ranger. Feel free to join there if you'd like to get some of this news. I'm finding that I'm often posting things on Brighteon.social or Telegram first, because it's faster and shorter, and then I'm publishing stories after that on Natural News. But we're going to go through the 23 important points here. This is the analysis of where we are, how things are escalating, and it's going to touch on, of course, the nuclear war threat, the cyber warfare threat, the financial institution blackout threat, power grid threat. Food inflation and food scarcity caused by all of this. Some of the dynamics between America, Ukraine, and Russia and other countries around the world, and why we're really in trouble right now, all of us. We are in deep trouble. Can we get through it? Well, I hope so. It kind of depends on what Biden chooses to do and what Putin chooses. Well, is Biden even choosing anything? I don't know. But this is not a rosy situation. We're going to go through this so we can be aware of what's happening and prepare accordingly. Just a programming note, our new Brighteon studio is complete, and I'm going to start filming there, interviewing a couple of people later on today, people that you've heard of, people you will recognize when we publish those interviews. Going to have a lot of in-studio guests in the new studio. It's pretty amazing. Big video wall, nice screens and everything. So can't wait to roll that out. And ultimately, we're going to transition all interviews into that studio, including when people are Skyping in and so on. So you'll see that. I want to thank you for your support so that we could actually build this studio, but we did it on a shoestring budget. You would not believe. You would not believe. Like, some of the light stands and the tripods that we're using are literally held together with metal coat hangers. And then there was one tripod that, one of the three legs just completely falling out. Look, the bolt is missing. So I found another kind of screw bolt that sort of fit, and I just jammed it in there and kept turning it until it was rigid. I was like, there, it's fixed. I mean, it's off camera. Who cares? But yeah, we had to rig a lot of stuff for this, but we made it work and it looks great. So I'll keep you posted about that. We should have interviews from that new studio posting this week, maybe Wednesday is my guess, but I'll keep you posted. All right, we've got 23 points to cover here. I don't know if I'm going to number them. Well, maybe I will. Okay, number one, we're all in urgent danger right now because this plan that Biden and Obama have had for a long time to maneuver Russia into a position where Putin might decide to nuke the United States, or where a false flag attack could be blamed on Russia. And remember, and I've said this, you've heard me say this maybe dozens of times over the last year or so, that Biden and Obama want a war with Russia so that they can use wartime powers to trample civil rights, take away the Second Amendment, you know, declare total national emergency worse than what Canada did, round people up that are political dissidents, you know, and shove them into COVID death camps or whatever. Big emergencies give government big justification for big powers to steamroll the people. All right, point number two. This rapid escalation could go from the financial war, which has already begun with the swift sanctions against Russia that were announced over the weekend. It could escalate to nuclear war quite rapidly, and then or nuclear false flags that are blamed on Russia. So right now, where we are right now today, is that the deep state could set off a nuke anywhere in America and immediately blame Russia. And the media would blame Russia. Everybody would blame Russia, even if it weren't Russia at all. So we are going to cover, as I said, also food riots on a global scale and famine and things like that in this analysis. It's not great news. Before we go to number three here, I just want to mention FIFA, the soccer tournament organization, whatever it's called, has now banned the Russian flag, and they've banned the Russian national anthem, and I guess they're just going to ban Russian players soon. And then all across Europe, RT is banned. And even in Canada, they banned Russian jets from flying over Canadian airspace. And then there's the Swift banning and so on. It just goes on and on. Is this starting to sound familiar to anybody who's also been banned and deplatformed everywhere? This is, and by the way, I'm not defending Russia. Don't get me wrong. I'm not defending Russia on everything that's going on. But this insane level of deplatforming, like you can't compete in the soccer tournaments now. It's like, what do the soccer players in Russia have to do with any of this? Nothing. Or like, oh, yeah, you can't have bank accounts if you're Russian. Yeah, you can't have a bank account anywhere in Europe now if you're just a Russian national. What if you're a Russian national selling like eco-friendly green sponges recycled from trash? You know, you're like super eco. You're part of the, you know, progressive green, like you're bestie friends with Greta Thunberg, and you just happen to be Russian. All of a sudden you're banned. You're deplatformed because you're Russian. I mean, this thing is getting crazy with the deplatforming. There are liquor stores in America and Canada just pouring out Russian vodka. What a horrible waste. I'll take the vodka. We can make tinctures out of that. You can use it for emergency first aid. I mean, my God, if you want to like get rid of a bunch of Russian vodka, I'll buy it at half price from you. I could stockpile some Russian vodka. It's got nothing to do with, you know, war or Putin or Ukraine or anything. It's Russian vodka. What is the deal with all this incredible deplatforming? And by the way, this is not conducive to any form of diplomacy. If you just shut off the people that you're opposed to, which by the way, this is what the left does. This is what progressives do. You're not going to get anywhere. Think about this. Think about the globalists and Western nations now and big tech and everything. On every issue that you can think of, they say there's only one narrative that's allowed. And right now on this conflict, the only narrative that's allowed is Ukraine's narrative, which by the way, Ukraine's official narrative is full of just as much hype as Russia's official narrative. I mean, on both sides, there's so much disinfo and misinfo and fake photos and fake videos. It's like both countries have these factories just pumping out all kinds of fakery all day long. Photos from 4 years ago that they say were just taken last night and things like that. Like, my goodness. You guys have like factories of trolls, both of you. It's amazing. But think about the Western media and big tech companies. Think about all along they've said, oh, there's only one allowable narrative on vaccines. There's only one allowable narrative on COVID. It came from, what was it, the food market in China. Yeah, the food market just happened to be down the road from the bioweapons laboratory. It's the food market, and that's the only thing that was allowed. Or what about election rigging? Oh, there's only one allowable narrative on election rigging, and that is that it wasn't rigged in 2020 because Democrats won, but anytime Democrats don't win, then it was rigged. Like, that's the only narrative allowed. You understand that, right? When Democrats lose, it was rigged. When Democrats win, it was the most honest election ever in the history of all elections. That's the only thing you're allowed to say. And so whatever you think about Russia and Ukraine and America and who's lying and who's telling the truth. Know one thing for sure. The Western control freaks at big tech and big media and big government of America, they lie all the time. They lie all the time. They almost never tell the truth about anything that matters. And yet they insist that they alone should have the only voice that's allowed. Folks, this is a recipe for disaster. This is never going to get us to any kind of diplomacy or any kind of peace or any kind of de-escalation. And that's the most important thing we need right now is de-escalation. Because you, like me, probably, we don't want to see anybody suffer, especially not the Ukrainian people. We don't want to see Ukrainian people, you know, getting killed, getting shot at, living under martial law, you know, living in fear, like dodging bombs and missiles all night. That's crazy. That's insane. Nobody should have to suffer through that. But also, we don't want to see, you know, Russian soldiers thrown at, Ukrainian military by Putin, like Russian soldiers just sacrificed. Probably thousands are dead already, getting blown up by, you know, Ukraine's drone systems that are made in Turkey. They put out some footage on that. It's like, you know, death by drone, blowing up Russian tanks, and you know, Russian soldiers just walking around near the tanks, just poof, gone in a poof of white light and fire, I guess. And it's like, why are all these innocent people dying when the problem is the leaders of nations and the corruption of those leaders and all the, you know, all the things that make the centralization of power bad for human civilization, greed and power and vengeance and all these things. And this is what we're all dealing with. But to imagine that there's only one allowable narrative that we should never talk to the other side, that no one should ever allow a Russian to speak again or to conduct business ever again, or to participate in sports ever again, that's absurd. That is severe isolationism, and we can never arrive at world peace through isolationism and a total rejection of the very right to exist of other nations. And by the way, I just have to bring us back to the fact that if bombing and invading countries is bad, no nation has violated it more often since World War II than the United States of America. Going in, like murdering Gaddafi, you know, overthrowing Libya, bombing Yemen and bombing Somalia. What else? Iraq. I mean, the whole war on Iraq. How many Iraqis died, huh? Anywhere from 500,000 to 1,000,000 Iraqi civilians died from the U.S. intervention in Iraq. Because the U.S. destroyed the infrastructure. The U.S. destroyed the water treatment facilities, the power grid, the communications, destroyed the ability for Iraq to function, and then executed Saddam Hussein. And then just pretended it was all okay, even though it turns out the intelligence that justified the whole thing, remember the yellow cake uranium weapons of mass destruction? It was all fabricated by the intelligence community, fabricated. Complete fiction. So by the standards that the media is screaming about right now over Russia and Ukraine, by those same standards, if standards even exist anymore, the United States of America owes the entire world a massive apology for invading and destroying Iraq among many other nations. And by the same standard, you know, America's flag shouldn't be allowed to be shown at the Olympics or soccer tournaments, and American news outlets should be banned in Europe and all over the world. I mean, if we're going to have standards, they should apply universally, shouldn't they? It's just unreal. The hypocrisy is nauseating. But moving on to point number three, we'll move more quickly from here forward. So Russia has put its nuclear deterrence forces on alert because of the financial sanctions. So what this means is that Russia has designated itself in a kind of nuclear readiness, kind of like a DEFCON situation in the United States. And then on video, there have been spotted, at least reportedly, although it's impossible to confirm when these videos were taken. So But there are videos circulating out there that claim that Russia's Topol M ICBMs are mobilizing in Western Russia. These are very long, very heavy. They look like giant cranes, you know, on wheels where they've got like 12 axles or 16 axles. But instead of carrying a giant crane, they're carrying giant nuclear missiles that are intercontinental. So those are driving around Russia or mobilizing, which is very worrisome. Okay. Point number four, America's financial infrastructure is very vulnerable to cyber attacks. And our power grid is extremely vulnerable. I mean, America's power grid barely functions even when it's not under cyber attack, by the way. And the Texas power grid failed a year ago, almost took the whole thing down. And on and off, America's grid regionally suffers all kinds of outages. Well, if Putin decides to retaliate against the financial sanctions by initiating cyber attacks against America's power grid, his cyber warrior forces could very likely cause devastating damage to the power grid and plunge America into darkness, at least regionally, or perhaps, you know, the eastern grid or parts of the eastern grid, you know, it's possible. Or, as I point out, the deep state in America could also unleash attacks against the power grid and then blame Putin. Because now, again, Putin can be blamed for anything. So this is the false flag season where I'm very concerned that our own so-called leaders, who are, of course, illegitimate, you know, they rigged the election, they stole the White House, they are enemy occupiers of the United States. They are at war with the American people, as is obvious from the vaccine death shots, you know, and the attacks on the Second Amendment, the attacks on the First Amendment, and so on. The fact that we have political prisoners in Washington, D.C. from January 6th, and one of them just committed suicide, by the way. So those people have been in jail for over a year. Some of them are being tortured. They are political prisoners. Isn't it interesting that every day America looks more and more like the old Soviet Union with the censorship, you know, with the political prisoners, with the tyranny? Every day, living in America feels a lot like living in Russia in 1988 or something, you know? It's crazy. Now, number five here, the USA has had a posture for a long time that if we are attacked with cyber attacks, the U.S. military can respond with a retaliation that involves kinetic retaliation. So in other words, somebody hits us with a cyber attack, the USA has said for a long time that we can retaliate with nuclear weapons or kinetic weapons or missile strikes or what have you. And the Washington Post even said the U.S. now has adopted a posture that it can respond to cyber attacks with nuclear weapons. So that is an official posture in the U.S. military. So what we're looking at now is a path of extreme escalation that can lead us to global war. And here's how it works, okay? Step one, Russia attacks Ukraine. We're already there. Step two, America hits Russia with banking sanctions. We're already there. That's already done. Step three, this is probably where it's going next, Russia unleashes cyber attacks in retaliation. And then number four, oh, and by the way, that could be a false flag carried out by the U.S. deep state against itself. Number four, then, in a retaliation against that, America launches nuclear weapons. Because that, again, that's the escalation that's in the Pentagon right now. And then step five, Russia responds by nuking American cities. And then all of a sudden we're in, you know, global thermonuclear war and everybody loses. Like everything's blown to smithereens. And there's radiation everywhere. If you thought Fukushima was bad, wait until the U.S. and Russia exchange, 50 or so thermonuclear warheads of 25 to 100 megatons each. This is basically going to make the Northern Hemisphere, you know, uninhabitable. All right. Number six. So Putin has been backed into a corner by the NATO expansionism via Ukraine. And then with the swift cutoff sanctions, Russia is going to be suffering with currency instability, possible bank runs, and also, of course, an impairment of their export capabilities. So as a result, because, see, Western forces are pushing Russia into such a corner, you know, cutting off Russia today, you know, cutting off their financial system, which is really an act of warfare, kind of like what the U.S. did to Japan. There was an economic embargo, specifically an oil embargo against Japan, carried out by the U.S. Navy, and that drove Japan into desperation to lash out and attack us at Pearl Harbor, because Japan realized we have no choice. Like, we can't exist as a country without oil, and unless we attack the U.S. Navy, they're just going to embargo all oil forever, and then Japan will, you know, be crushed. So Russia's kind of in a similar situation where Russia, you could say, is financially surrounded with these economic sanctions, but it's also kind of forcing Russia to lash out in a more aggressive way or to just surrender and die, which is not what Putin is going to do. So this is actually, I think, a calculated encouragement of escalation on the part of Putin. And this is what Biden and Obama want to see happen. They want to see Putin going to more and more aggressive weapons for all the reasons we've talked about. Now, number seven, we've known for years that the Clinton regime had planned to nuke a U.S. city and blame Russia. This was going to be a false flag after Hillary Clinton stole the election in 2016, but she failed to steal it. The theft was thwarted. And then Trump took office. And then for 4 years, the deep state just tried to attack Trump and falsely claim that Trump was run by Russia. Remember, when Democrats lose elections, they say it's rigged. So Trump gave us 4 years without war with Russia. And sure enough, here, just barely a year after Trump is out of office, we're in a war with Russia, which is exactly what the Clintons wanted and is what Obama wanted in the first place. So my conclusion is that our own corrupt criminal government may be just as dangerous as Putin, perhaps even more dangerous. It was like our government hates us. I should say our illegitimate occupying fake government. They hate us. Whereas Putin, I don't think, wants to engage the United States. Putin wants to deal with regional issues there. Putin wants to take Ukraine or half of Ukraine, but Putin doesn't want to have a war with America. Whereas our own fake corrupt criminal leaders in America, they want to destroy America. They want to rip down the statues. They're waging cultural warfare. They're waging vaccine warfare, biological warfare. They've declared war on freedom of speech. They're going to roll out the social credit score system. You know, conservatives are being debanked and deplatformed everywhere. And then our own DOJ announces that if you disagree with Biden on anything, then you're a terrorist. You know, if you have a dissenting view on vaccines or anything, oh, you're a terrorist. So yeah, this is exactly what we'd expect from a totalitarian, authoritarian regime, which again is quite resembles the Soviet Union in 1988, but it's the United States of America in 2022. All right. So, point number eight, I actually kind of mentioned this, the most dangerous entity in the world is your own government. Whether you live in Canada, the United States, Ukraine, Russia, New Zealand, Australia, China, the most dangerous entity is your own government, because almost every government in the world, with a few exceptions, but most governments are waging warfare against their own populations right now. They're trying to exterminate humanity. They're on board with the globalist depopulation plan. So, point number nine, I'm issuing a red alert right now to everyone to prepare for the very real possibility of a nuclear detonation in the United States, followed by cyber warfare assaults on banks, the power grid, and the telecom infrastructure. If there are nuclear detonations, they would very likely target Cheyenne Mountain, for example, in Colorado, because it's a military strategic location. A nuclear bomb could target, you know, Washington, D.C., obviously, or New York City, or other military bases all around the country. But in terms of causing the most economic damage or political damage, they would probably target D.C. or New York City. But I am urging everybody right now to plan for a takedown of the power grid, plan for most financial institutions to cease functioning, plan for a telecommunications takedown. This means, by the way, that crypto will not function because it needs electricity. Cell phones will not function. We think sat phones will function because the military satellites will remain on. So, you know, that's a reason why we promote satellite phones as a backup plan. But in terms of finances, a backup plan is having things to barter with, which could be silver coins or gold or 22 long rifle ammo or, I don't know, frozen ground beef for that matter. Have you priced meat lately, you know? Just being able to barter anything of value. How about emergency first aid or batteries or whatever? There's a lot of things. But be prepared. Now, the takedown of the power grid, a nuclear engagement, you know, all these things are no longer, these aren't fringe conspiracy theories. You can now see the pathway of how this happens. It's rather evident. And by the way, without banks, without financial transactions working, without electricity, you won't be able to buy anything unless you have something to barter with. You won't be able to use, you know, debit cards or, you know, food stamp debits or, you know, credit cards or anything. No food. Because how are the grocery stores going to buy their food? How are they going to get their commercial transactions done? How are they going to take delivery? You won't be able to buy food, no fuel, no paychecks, no ATMs working, nothing. And probably followed by a currency collapse as well. So all these scenarios that once seemed pretty far out there, you know, when, if you used to listen to my interviews a year ago with, you know, like Jeff Nyquist or Dave Hodges or Steve Quayle, and you were thinking, oh, there's no way that America is going to be in a world war. You know, there's no way. Well, you know, welcome to 2022. Now every day is another escalation with Russia. So. Plan for things to not function. Number 10, bankers' wars. Here, we're going to get into the financial aspects here. So SWIFT, the SWIFT system, has now cut off key banks of Russia. And as I said earlier, this is the equivalent of kind of a World War II oil embargo against Japan. And I think this is being used to try to force Putin into an escalation retaliation of some kind. Point number 11, this is key. Biden has not placed sanctions on Russia's energy sector. But Biden has halted U.S. pipelines, and he has effectively placed sanctions against the United States energy sector. So he's halted drilling, he's halted exploration, he's canceled pipelines, and so on. So think about this. Our own so-called president, Joe Biden, even though he's claiming that Russia is evil and they're attacking innocent people, he will not put sanctions on Russia's energy sector, but he will put all kinds of sanctions on America's energy sector. Why is that? Answer, because the American people are the intended targets of government financial terrorism. We are the ones targeted with sanctions. So in effect, and I hope everybody realizes this, the fact that Biden has shut off exploration and pipelines and more drilling and so on means that energy prices stay very, very high on it, at a global scale. Well, high energy prices produce a windfall of profits for Putin, which is more than paying for whatever costs Putin has incurred through his invasion of Ukraine. And at the same time, the American people are paying through the nose, like double fuel prices compared to what they were under Trump. And so Biden is punishing America, but enriching Russia. Think about that. That's what his policies are accomplishing. So who's actually being punished? The American people. Who's being rewarded? Putin. So Biden is rewarding Putin with billions of dollars in revenues and allowing Putin to raise the money to cover his costs of attacking Ukraine. And point number 12 is just a reminder, and I did a little short podcast on this. Remember that whatever the SWIFT bankers do to Russia, they can also do to you. So this debanking of Russia through the SWIFT system this is going to translate into, well, at the scale of individuals, a social credit score system where, you know, you go to an ATM and you punch in your code. You want to withdraw $500 and the screen says, oh, well, you're limited to only $50 today because it turns out you made a Facebook post that was critical of Biden. And you're like, what? Yep. Welcome to the social credit score debanking system. Right. You should not cheer centralized control systems punishing nations because they're going to do the same thing to you. That's what's coming to you. And in Canada, by the way, if you disagree with the government, they just loot your bank account, steal all your money. That's what they did. So, yeah. Point number 14, this is the perfect storm case for widespread crypto adoption because it means that entire nations, but also banks and corporations around the world are observing all this. They're seeing that the SWIFT system has been weaponized by the West. And individual citizens in these countries are seeing that their own banks have been weaponized by their governments. And so the only natural thing for people to do is to seek out alternatives to centralized international banking transaction systems or even local banks that are controlled by their governments. So nations like Russia, as they look at alternatives, and alternatives exist, by the way, there's a China-based system, I think it's called CIPS, that's an alternative to SWIFT. Well, you can bet Russia's jumping on that right now. There's also Ripple, related to XRP. So Ripple is a cryptocurrency that can be used by banks to quickly clear transactions internationally, usually in 3 to 4 seconds. At virtually zero cost, and it's being used by a lot of banks right now and adopted by others. You know, Ripple makes SWIFT obsolete. And no, seriously. You know, the SWIFT system, it turns out it was created in the early 1970s, I believe. It's old and slow and stupid. Whereas Ripple is fast and elegant and, you know, clean. So think about this. By weaponizing SWIFT, Western nations have only accelerated the global migration away from SWIFT systems, which means away from New York banks and away from centralized central bank authority or monopolistic control over international finance that has been exerted by the United States for, what, 75 years or more. That's coming to an end. So once, see, if you're a platform provider, which is what America has been after World War II, you know, the petrodollar and the SWIFT system a few decades later. And it was like, well, every country can buy and sell and trade, you know, and can use this system and there's no judgment. You know, you're not going to be singled out. So that makes you a platform provider. But at some point, if you start to weaponize that platform and say, well, you can only use this platform if you agree with our political positions, then you've just basically shot yourself in the foot, politically speaking. And the nations and corporations and banks of the world are going to look for alternatives. And that's exactly what's happening. But it's also happening at a personal level as people get out of the banking system and move into cryptocurrency alternatives. And by the way, on this particular point, you start to look at financial uncertainty, which I'm sure we're going to see a lot of today in the markets. I bet you the markets are steeped in turmoil today, but people are going to be looking at fiat currency risk and how to minimize that risk by transferring assets to other things. So a question to you right now, if there existed a system where you could get out of the dollar and into some stable, reliable crypto system or electronic system that was decentralized, that couldn't be banned or couldn't be looted, and you could use it to pay for all your business expenses, you know, to pay for payroll or to pay suppliers or to pay for electricity or what have you. Wouldn't you switch to that system today? And wouldn't you just use that instead of holding dollars in bank accounts? Because your bank accounts can be looted and probably will be. Your bank accounts can be shut off. You can be put on a list by the government, and a lot of Americans are on a list. And then you can have your bank account shut off. Look what they did to Mike Lindell, MyPillow. Local bank just said, oh, well, it's reputation risk. We just don't want to be associated with you. They shut him off. Why would you do business with any institution that is on the side of evil and is forcing you into silence if you want to do business with them? You know, again, that's the kind of thing that the old Soviet Union would have done, but it's being done in America today. All right, point number 15. We anticipate sharp increases in gold, silver, oil, and mineral commodities, price increases. And this is going to include copper, aluminum, cobalt, manganese, and the lithium. This is going to increase cost to build homes and buildings and vehicles, computers, and so on. So probably my guess is that we're going to see price increases on many of these things and supply chain disruptions worsening for the next couple of years, and that it's going to make what we saw due to COVID look like a walk in the park. So I think life is about to get very difficult for people in America, and I think it's being done to us on purpose because our own corrupt, fake, occupying government is at war with us. And they're trying to provoke Putin into attacking America to make it even worse. So, you know, they're poking the bear like a bear with nukes because they want to see America nuked. They want to see America destroyed. And now you're seeing it play out. Point number 16. We're talking about food and agriculture here. Ukraine's traditional spring planting of crops is probably a bust, and Russia's crops will face export restrictions because of, you know, all these economic sanctions. So also the southern ports of Ukraine, like Odessa, are not functional for commercial activity. The Black Sea is a very, very dangerous place to be sailing right now for obvious reasons. So what we're going to see throughout 2022 and well into 23 and even beyond is a global shortage of wheat, corn, soy, and of course, you know, sunflower oils and so on, other things that are produced in very high quantities in Ukraine and also parts of Western Russia. And what this means is scarcity on a global level combined with, of course, food inflation at retail, at the grocery store. So this means people, more and more everyday people, even people who don't pay attention to any of this stuff, they're just at home playing video games, and the only time they ever see reality is when they have to pay for something at the grocery store or the gas pump. Well, they're going to get hammered at both places. So they're like, whoa, gas has doubled again. And so has the cost of a cheeseburger. You know, they're going to notice it. This is going to take a toll. Number 17, well, I actually kind of said that. It means huge price increases in food. But here I also mention the cancellation of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which shuttled natural gas from Russia to Germany. So that's been canceled now, which means Germany is going to have, of course, a fossil fuel shortage, an energy shortage. That's going to translate into a fertilizer shortage because, of course, fertilizer is used to make fossil fuels. That's actually point number 18. The Haber equation describes how fossil fuels and hydrocarbons are used to produce ammonia, NH3, which is the base molecule for virtually all fertilizers. And roughly about 5 billion people around the world right now depend on these fertilizers to feed themselves. So we live in a world, understand this, we live in a world where more than half the population has to have affordable fossil fuels in order to not starve. And now fossil fuels are getting shut down in every way you can think of. Europe's shutting them down to be green. And by the way, they're realizing that's a suicide pact. But, and then Russia, its energy is being shut down by the economic sanctions. And then America's energy is being shut down by the lunatic criminals in charge. You know, the enemy occupiers of the Oval Office and so on. So everywhere around the world, energy is being shut down, which means fertilizer is being shut down. And that means that you're going to have fertilizer scarcity, but also fertilizer price increases. And if you think about farming, what are the two biggest inputs? Fertilizer and fuel. Because you got to drive the tractors and you got to have something to spread onto the crops in terms of fertilizer. So it's fertilizer and fuel. And both of those come from fossil fuels. And both of those are under extreme attack. And what this means is that a lot of farmers are going to realize they might as well not plant because they can't make any money because of the prices of those two inputs. So you're going to have farmers, just a lot of them, doing nothing. It's like, it's better to just not farm. And then what's going to happen to food prices? Of course, it's going to skyrocket with worsening scarcity. So that was point number 19. Point 20 is, if you think about this, if Biden wanted to harm Putin and help the American people, then Biden would open up massive oil exploration and drilling and pipelines, let the oil flow. And that would drop the price of a barrel of oil, and it would drop prices at the gas pump. It would drop the prices for fertilizer production, and it would result in more agricultural production of abundant, affordable food. So food would be cheaper, fuel would be cheaper, and then Putin would make less money because global energy prices would be suppressed due to the very high increase in supply that we're talking about here. Putin wouldn't make as much money. So that's the way to actually economically starve out Putin, if that were your goal. That's how that could be accomplished. But Biden's doing the opposite, as we've already talked about. Biden is strangling the American people and enriching Putin, and I don't think that's an accident. So that was point number 20. Now, number 21 is that we predict food riots in the U.S. at some point, as food inflation makes even basic sustenance unaffordable to low-wage workers. You see, the workers, even if you're earning $10, $12, $15 an hour, if you have to buy a lot of fuel and you have to buy a lot of food, it doesn't even make economic sense for a lot of workers at that wage level, because their wages aren't going up as quickly as the food and fuel inflation are going up. For some people, it might make more economic sense to not drive anywhere, stay home, collect benefits, and live off cheap beans and rice that require a lot of cooking time, but you have free time because you're not working, so you just stay home, cook affordable meals, and collect money from the government, you know, unemployment, welfare, COVID stimulus checks. You actually end up making more than working. So then for this entire class of people, the incentive to work has been decimated. It's going to get even worse. And if it gets bad enough, where the food prices get bad enough, then they're going to, of course, face starvation and famine, and they're going to riot. So I believe we're going to have food riots in American cities before the end of this calendar year. And they may well extend into 2023 and beyond, because I don't see this getting fixed anytime soon. Now, I didn't include this in the analysis, but the other important point here is the money printing. So the more money that's printed, obviously the fiat currency is inflating prices as well by devaluing the dollar. So, you know, your dollar is worth less and less each and every day. And the only way to get off that train of devaluation is to convert your dollars into physical things that hold value, such as gold or silver, or, you know, tractors, as I've mentioned before, or land, or buildings, firearms, ammunition, things that hold value. Used cars, used trucks. Frankly, a used truck right now is kind of like a savings account, you know, and it's going up in value, and it'll probably go up next year. You'll probably be able to profit off of buying used cars or trucks in particular. Everybody needs a truck. And this is exactly what has happened historically in nations that were experiencing hyperinflation. So since people realized the currency was not, you know, holding value, they could be losing 10%, 20% a month. And we're not there yet in America. We're at about 25% a year, but that it's going to accelerate. Mark my words, it's going to accelerate maybe to 40 or 50% a year. But anyway, in hyperinflation countries, people realized that they had to get out of their currency as fast as possible. They had to get into something that would stop losing money. And so they would buy used vehicles. And as long as you didn't put more miles on the vehicle, it essentially held its value. So used vehicles then became scarce because everybody figured this out. And used vehicles themselves went into kind of a bubble because so many people wanted to buy them as a hedge against devaluation of the fiat currency issued by the bank. Now, of course, vehicles can be seized by governments, and sure that happens. But so can land and so can real estate. And I suppose at some point, so can gold, but first the government has to find the gold. So the thing about gold is it's easier to hide than a truck. You can hide gold in a very tiny place. You can't hide a truck very easily. Pretty easy to spot. So point number 22 here in this list is that if you look at all these factors combined, the food scarcity, potential for war, cyber attacks, fuel inflation, food inflation, you know, the fertilizer problems and so on, currency devaluation, we're looking at a risk of a total collapse of the world that we once knew. We're never going back to pre-2019. Not going to happen. We're never going back to a world where you're going to have convenient, just-in-time delivery, where everything is in stock, and if they don't have it, they'll order it, and it'll arrive in the next day or two. No, you're going to be waiting weeks, and in some cases, some parts or some products will just never be available again. The world that we live in is about to become very inconvenient, expensive, and essentially broken. The supply chain disruptions, I've concluded, are going to get far worse from here forward. Now, along with that, we're going to see crime skyrocket, especially in the blue cities, out of a sheer desperation. A lot of people living in the cities are going to find out that they can't afford the food, and they can't afford to move either. And you're going to see, I think, flash mobs looting grocery stores. And they're going to go for the meat section, probably. You're going to see flash mobs like carting out thousands of dollars of frozen meat products from the grocery store. Like some dude running out with six bags of like chicken legs, you know? You're going to think, whoa, what kind of world is this? Well, this is the Biden economy. You know, welcome. You're going to see carjacking skyrocket. I think you're going to see a lot of home invasions on the rise. And I think you're going to see looting gangs moving outside the cities into the suburbs. And this is why I've said many times, it's not safe to be in the city. And, you know, this really explains why, but it's also not safe to be close to the city, because as the desperation increases, the radius of looting also increases. So the farther away from the city that you can be, the safer you're going to be overall. And also the farther away from the city, the more likely you are to be in a rural area with sheriffs that support the Second Amendment and so on. And then you're able to potentially defend yourself without getting, you know, arrested and blamed as you might be in a blue city, because they're all anti-gun. You get out into the country, it's all pro-gun, or mostly. And then you have the right to defend yourself, and a lot of looters are going to learn to think twice if they're not, you know, dead from being shot by other homeowners, you know. Seriously. They start looting the countryside in places like, you know, Texas or Tennessee. Going to be a lot of dead looters real quick. You know, in certain kind of collapse scenarios, especially in Tennessee, you're going to see looters like shot and then strung up on trees with signs on their chests like, "We shoot looters," or something like that. Or maybe it'll be Die Hard, you know, "Ho, ho, ho, Merry Christmas." But whatever it is, looters aren't going to get very far in rural America. You know how Ukraine handed out 10,000 automatic weapons, which seems, you know, pretty insane. It's just like driving through neighborhoods, unloading crates of automatic weapons. Like, here, do you ever want a full auto AK? Just pick one up, you know? That's what they did. And people picked them up. And I don't know if anybody's crazy enough to engage like a Russian military unit with your full auto AK with, you know, no other comms or military equipment. But maybe somebody's tried that. It seems like a suicide mission to me. But the reason I mention that is because if anybody ever invades Texas or Tennessee or Arizona or Florida or Utah or what have you, they're going to find that everybody's armed, like well armed. And the government's not going to need to hand out guns. People just going to kind of pull them off the wall. It's like, "I've been waiting for this," you know. That's the attitude, well, at least in Texas, among some people. I mean, nobody wants to see war, but if they come for Texas, and I can't speak for other states, but if they come for Texas, the people of Texas are going to fight back hard. There's going to be no mercy for any invaders of Texas. All right, so point number 23, this is the last point in this mega thread. And this is my advice. Whatever preparedness actions you've taken so far, double down. Get ready for the possibility of needing to survive months without food, electricity, banking, fuel, emergency medicine, or even the rule of law. Months. And I even wrote, what we all experienced in 2020 and 21, it was just a warm-up round, I think, compared to what's coming because of Biden's declaration of war against the American people. And I also mentioned Trump's leadership sure is looking good right about now. Russia didn't invade Ukraine when Trump was president. Trump provided strength and stability. And I could handle Trump's mean tweets and weird off-the-cuff remarks on a hot mic. I don't care. At least Trump was strong against North Korea, strong against China, very strong. Trump was strong, you know, against Russia. And, you know, Trump's not perfect, obviously. You know, his vaccine advocacy is a big red flag. You know, Operation Warp Speed. I still don't understand how he could support vaccines. But at least he didn't get us into World War III. All right, so I've got some more analysis and comments here. That's the list of 23. I've got more information to share. Let me bring in the sponsor of the Satellite Phone Store. For all the reasons that make sense here, you know, having a backup comms device makes a ton of sense. Now, check them out at sat123.com. That's sat123.com. Remember, they have satellite phones and also two-way satellite text messaging devices known as bivy sticks. And also, we've seen an uptick in iodine purchases at the Health Ranger store. Currently, we still have iodine in stock, but I doubt that's going to last very long as there's more talk of, you know, nuclear this and nuclear that. People are going to realize, whoa, I should probably, you know, double my iodine supply or something. So we'll probably be out of that pretty soon. But for now, you can get our liquid iodine at healthrangerstore.com. Also, we have both red miso and yellow miso. I think it's a freeze-dried powder that's used to make miso soup. And you're wondering, why am I mentioning miso soup? The answer is, well, look at the history of miso that was consumed by the Japanese citizens following Hiroshima. And you'll understand why miso. Why miso happy about miso? I'm sorry, that was totally uncalled for. But I have to crack some cold joke in here at some point. The whole thing can't be, you know, doomsday. But that was the worst joke ever. I apologize. All right, now moving on to additional analysis, as I promised. Here's the thing. Most Americans, and when I say Americans, I know a lot of people are listening in Canada or the UK or Singapore, wherever, but most of us in Western nations are, most people, not us, but most of the masses are completely oblivious to what is happening. They believe the CNN narrative. They believe every time they're lied to, they believe it. They thought the vaccines were great, you know, until they got myocarditis and so on. They're oblivious. And so most people will not prepare. Most people will not even be aware of the things that we've talked about here today, the risk of cyber war attacks on the financial infrastructure, the risk of nuclear attacks, the risk of a power grid failure, and so on. People will not prepare. Now, I even mentioned this about the people of Ukraine, and not in any way, you know, condemning them or insulting them, because the people of Ukraine are great people. They are really resourceful, intelligent, wonderful people. And I wish them prayers and safety and blessings. But even people of Ukraine overall were not well prepared for what happened. And that's why so many cars ran out of gas, you know, on the highways trying to drive westward out of Kiev and other cities. There are thousands of cars, maybe tens of thousands, abandoned on the highways right now because they ran out of gas. Because they did not have gas cans with gas. And then by the time everybody figured out, oh, we need more gas, there was no more gas, you know, available. Now, I'm sure there are preppers in Ukraine, because there are preppers in every nation everywhere. And the preppers are probably like, yep, saw this coming, you know, and they've got 50 gas cans and they've got, they already had full auto weapons, maybe, you know, 10-year supply of food. And probably the Ukrainian preppers, I'm just guessing, did not live in the cities and they lived more in the countryside, you know, because that's where preppers tend to go. And those people are typically right now, you know, not being subjected to the same focus of the Russian attacks on the cities. But a lot of people did not prep. And this is a universal thing. So I'm not singling out Ukraine. Most Americans don't prep. Most Canadians don't prep. And as a result, when it starts to hit the fan, they're going to go into a panic. And they're going to suddenly realize they need food, they need, you know, iodine, they need medical supplies, they need communications. And when people get desperate, they tend to do crazy things. Now, here's what's interesting. Ukraine is, for the most part, at least this is my perception, Ukraine is a more orderly society overall than the United States. Like in Ukraine, they don't have flash mob lootings of retail stores in broad daylight. In Ukraine, they don't have policies where everybody can just walk into convenience stores and fill up bags with stolen goods and just walk right out, right past the security guards. That doesn't happen in Ukraine. Ukraine is a more orderly society, or at least it was until this, you know, this Russian invasion situation. But by and large across Europe, you know, European societies tend to be more orderly. The people there tend to be more civil in following, you know, basic rules of society, like, oh, standing in line, you know, not looting your neighbor's shop, things like that. But in America, we're already in a society that's on the verge of breakdown even before a grid down collapse, even before World War III. We're living in a society where the media, the journo terrorism, the psychological assaults on the American people have, they've tried to turn America into a race war battleground. They've tried to create hatred between whites and blacks, for example. I think they failed overall because I think informed white people and black people realize that we're all the same brothers and sisters. The, you know, the real enemies of humanity are the globalists that are trying to kill us all. But the media is trying to whip up a lot of hatred and a lot of lawlessness, and the Democrats have combined that with defunding the police and attacking the police and demonizing police. And then they've had George Soros-funded district attorneys who let criminals loose. You know, when COVID hit, the first thing they did in California is they released all the criminals onto the streets. So I was like, well, they might get COVID in prison. Let's just let them go out and keep, you know, raping and looting and murdering people. That would be so much safer than risking COVID in prison. That was literally what they did. That's the governor of California right there, Newsom. That's what they did. They want lawlessness. They want violence and chaos. Well, they're going to get it. Any of these blue cities are going to be death traps. Not just because of the desperation and the lack of preparedness, but because of the lack of civility. The lack of any kind of cohesive, underlying, you know, cultural fabric where we could all say we're Americans and we're rooting for America. Half the country in America today, the left half, they're not rooting for America. I mean, most people in Ukraine are rooting for Ukraine. Most people. You know, except the breakaway regions of Donetsk and Luhansk. And so, I mean, they don't want to be part of Ukraine, but all the people in Kiev are by and large, the vast majority. And of course, all of Western Ukraine, I mean, they're rooting for Ukraine and they identify as Ukrainians, not as Russians and not as Western Europeans either. They identify as Ukraine, their own country. But they have that in common. You meet somebody in an underground bunker almost anywhere in Ukraine that's under attack right now, and they, by and large, most people will say, yes, we identify as Ukraine. We want Ukraine to survive, you know. But in America, it's not that way. More than half the people in these liberal cities, they would love to see America fall. They hate America. They've been taught to hate the flag. They've been taught to tear down statues. So when chaos comes to America, you're going to be dealing with people who are psychologically already primed as enemies of America. It's almost as if nobody even has to invade America with, you know, communist forces, because some portion of the country is already indoctrinated into communism and Marxism and hatred for the country. And you can tell who those people are, you know, by the way they dress and talk and all the weird body modifications, and just, they all look like weird twisted demons, it seems, by the way, or at least a lot of them do. You know, probably if Russia invaded America, just theoretically, I'm not saying they're going to right now, but theoretically, a lot of these leftists would cheer Russia invading America. They would cheer it. Or let's say an even better example, China. If the CCP were to invade America from the southern border and the northern border, there's a lot of leftists that would cheer it. They would think that's great. Finally, we're being rescued by the communist China. You know, finally, America is being taken down, the evil imperialism and the white supremacy and whatever else they think America is run with. And then, of course, it wouldn't be long before these leftists would themselves be executed by the People's Liberation Army troops, but they wouldn't realize how wrong they are even as they're being executed. You know, they'd probably be told, you know, kneel down in front of this giant ditch, and they would probably tell themselves, this is awesome. I'm being knighted. I'm being recognized for my contributions to bringing down this imperialist society. And then it would be like, kaboom, lights out, body dumped in a ditch. They wouldn't even know what hit them. That's how delusional they are. They're cultists. They hate America. So that's a huge difference that you need to calculate between how the Ukrainian people are dealing with this versus how the American people would deal with this if America were to undergo some kind of a similar crisis. And by the way, Ukraine right now, even though Ukraine's under attack, the power grid is still working by and large. They still have bandwidth in Kiev and other places. I mean, yeah, they can't use airports and the trains are down and the highways are blocked, but they still have running water in most places. And they still have electricity and they still have communications. The phones work. Cell towers work in many places, not all, but in many places. Whereas if you talk about a power grid outage in America, everything goes down. The banks go down. You know, the gas stations can't pump gas. Cell towers don't work, right? It all goes down. So you might think, well, you know, dodging missiles and bullets from Russian troops, that must be the worst thing ever. Well, it is pretty bad, but it could be worse if you're dodging bullets and missiles and you have no power, no electricity, no communications, no running water, and no way out. Like, that's worse. Or, in similar fashion, what if you have no power, no comms, no running water, no 911 working in America? The lights go out, the banks go down, the food is gone, and then you have crazy, unprepared left-wing demon zombies coming after you, like some horde, like a zombie apocalypse migrating out of the city, screaming like, down with America and feed us, you know, looking for food while they figure out how to destroy America because they hate the country so much because they've been brainwashed. That's even crazier than what the people of Ukraine are dealing with. And, you know, it's pretty obvious if you're part of the Ukrainian military and, you know, the Russians are coming down your highway and attacking you, you know, it's pretty obvious, you know, you shoot back, right? Cause you're defending your nation. But if you're in America and then the lights go out and you have a total collapse and then you have these other like weird looking Americans approaching you in a large zombie group, they're like, what do you do exactly? You know, I mean, they're not really enemy combatants. They're not soldiers. They're just kind of pathetic creatures. They're more like locusts, actually, just kind of spreading across the landscape, trying to eat everything in sight. And what do you do with these people? I don't know the answer, by the way. I'm not sure. Well, actually, I have thought about this some, and I've shared this with you. And so, you know, I've prepped at a scale that most people aren't able to do just because I happen to run, you know, a giant food warehouse and manufacture and so on. So I've prepped at a level where I can donate a lot of food and a lot of supplies to local churches. And then I had planned that if we started to get, you know, people walking so far out into the country where they happened by, you know, my ranch, well, I was going to maybe put a big sign at the front gate that says, you know, food donations at the church, you know, 2 miles down on your right or whatever. And then also a sign like, don't enter this property or you will be shot. So it's kind of like giving them instructions, you know, you might want to consider this wherever you are, give them instructions and give them a choice, but also have boundaries. So it's like, hey, you want some food? We've made donations. You just go to the church. We've given it all to the church. But if you come in, if you trespass, you will be shot. And I think in a crisis time, like a time of chaos and lawlessness, that's actually a pretty balanced approach, because you can't compromise your own security by just letting hordes of people walk up on you. You don't know what their intentions are, but you also want to help people. And people will tend to, you know, respect a church more than they would respect private property. Even a lot of thieves would have more respect for a church because they don't want to be punished by God. Like, they don't mind, you know, killing ranchers or country folk, but they don't want to be punished by God because some of them are Catholic and they still believe a little bit, you know, enough to be afraid. So that's one suggestion you might want to consider. Set your boundaries, protect your place, but also donate at a community level. But right now, these are all just what ifs, but suddenly, because of what's happening with Ukraine and Russia and, you know, Biden and Putin and so on, these are becoming more potentially realistic scenarios very rapidly. If you've ever wondered, you know, how we could end up in a nuclear war with Russia, now the pathway is rather clear. We've talked about it here. So I can assure you ammunition is going to get more scarce and more expensive. A lot of ammo is made out of copper. And of course the brass cases use nickel, and both copper and nickel are going to be in short supply because of the situation in Ukraine. So ammo is going to go up. So once again, buying ammo, even at the inflated prices that exist right now, it's about double what it should be. It's probably going to become quadruple, is my guess. Firearms, where legal, I believe, are still a very good investment. Practical, and can be used as a form of barter. And they really hold their value. I think they're going to hold their value for a very long time. I already mentioned vehicles, food, obviously. You know, good quality survival tools, like, you know, good quality knives or blades that we've mentioned before. Sponsor of the podcast, you know, Dawson Knives. They have really good equipment. It's a lifetime investment. You know, you get a good blade, you're going to be able to use it forever or trade it for something really, really valuable. And speaking of that, you know, backyard chickens. Chickens are tradable. You can barter chickens and eggs. You know, who doesn't want an omelet in the middle of, you know, a collapse, right? To have an omelet would be kind of a nice thing. And here in Texas, by the way, we have wild onions that the hogs root up. And you can go dig them up yourself. They're everywhere. Dig up these wild onions. They're kind of small, but they're really potent. You can, you know, get some chicken eggs and some wild onions and whatever else you can, you know, rustle up out there. You can make yourself some omelets, even in a crisis. Or you can, I guess, shoot some wild hogs, and if you can handle the stink of their hog flesh and clean them, which I can't stomach that, but if you're up for that, you can have some wild hog bacon, I guess. there's a lot of bacon running around out there every night. I see them. I run up on them sometimes. You may have heard the story, but I was out one evening and I heard the wild hogs, I heard one of them screaming like, rah, 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 and I was like, what's going on? And so I grabbed my rifle and my headlight and I went out there. I thought a wild hog was being attacked by a group of coyotes or something. I thought it was, and it turns out it was just adult male hogs fighting each other, but I didn't know that at the time. And then I was out there walking around with my rifle and my light. And, you know, at one point I'm standing at a certain area and this hog just comes running up to me and he stops about, I guess it was like 15 feet away. He stops and just looks at me. He's a pretty big hog, you know, with tusks and everything. And I'm standing there with my rifle and I think he just paused and looked at me. And I think I said, "What's up, piggy piggy," or something like that. And he just grunts, he goes, and then he just walks away. And I was thinking how funny that was, that it's like the only hog in Texas that comes up on a guy with a rifle where the hog doesn't get shot, because I'm not into that. But of course, if he had attacked me, I would have shot him, but he didn't. He just stood a ways and he's looking at me. He's like, "Who are you and why are you interfering with my grudge match against this other wild hog, you know?" Anyway, just bottom line, life's going to get hard. I'm sorry to say. Life's going to get hard, especially for those who did not prepare. So the good news, if there is a silver lining to all of this, is that people like you and I, we've gone through so much of a mental rehearsal of these kinds of scenarios that when these things happen, they don't seem like crazy thoughts. They're not out there. They're things that we have thought through before. You know, how do you survive a grid down scenario? How do you survive no food? How do you survive collapse of the rule of law? We've gone through these scenarios many times. That's what preppers do. That's almost the definition of prepping. You know, really, it's more mental prepping, so that you don't freak out, you don't panic, and you do have a plan that makes sense and you can get through it. So that's the silver lining here, folks. Yeah, we're going to go through some crazy, insane stuff. And yes, we saw this coming. I've been warning about this for years, especially in the last 6 months, over and over again. This specific blueprint where Biden was going to force Putin into a scenario where Putin would attack America. Remember, I've talked about it many times. So yes, we've seen it coming, but we know how to make it through this. We have the knowledge. You and I and all of us in this community of informed, you know, patriots and preppers or whatever you want to call us, but we're also, you know, natural health practitioners. We're healers. We're ranchers. We are, I don't know, survivalists, but also compassionate healers. We're spiritual people. We're capable people. We're hands-on people in lots of different ways for healing and for rescue and for rebuilding society and all kinds of things. There's no one label to slap on all of us except for the fact that we have faith that we can make it through this. We have faith in God and faith in humanity. I think that's the common thread of all of us here. And that's all we need. We are pro-human and we believe in God. And if you believe in those two things, you're willing to learn and listen and be awake and aware, then you have what it takes to make it through this. It's not going to be easy, but it is survivable. So that's my message for leading off this week. It's going to be a crazy week. I have no doubt. We're going to see an escalation probably every day or two. Some new crazy announcement by Biden or some response by Putin or some, I don't know, retaliation or some media narrative full of lies. The media is also a very dangerous part of this war because they're constantly lying and misleading the people into believing false things. But we're going to see a crazy week. Financial markets are going to be bonkers for several days. You're going to see things happen that are just mind-blowing. Don't forget, by the way, it was currency devaluation, sudden devaluation that led to the long-term capital management near implosion in 1997, which was the very first case of the so-called too-big-to-fail bailouts. You recall that? That was 97. I think that was due to currency valuation fluctuations of the Thai baht currency, Southeast Asia, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going from memory, though. What happens if the Russian currency collapses? What happens if there's a ripple effect? What happens if a lot of banks get nervous or a lot of banking customers get nervous all around the world and start pulling their money out of the banks? What happens, huh? There could be a cascading domino effect of just chaos and collapse. this is the time to be prepared for all these scenarios and even double down on your preparedness if you can. That's what I'm doing. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes, but it's going to be a crazy week. I will be posting, if there are any breaking news updates, I'll be posting on Telegram. Real Health Ranger is my channel there. And also, of course, Brightown.social, where my name there is Health Ranger. As soon as Truth Social is up, I'll be posting there under Health Ranger. But I'm not sure when that's going to function. Hopefully soon. We'll see. In the meantime, be safe. Be prepared. Yeah, it's going to get interesting. Okay. God bless. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.